Good afternoon. Welcome to the July 1st, 2025 regular meeting of the San Francisco Board of Supervisors. Madam Clerk, will you please call the roll?
Thank you, Mr. President. Supervisor Chan. Chan present. Supervisor Chen. Chen present. Supervisor Dorsey. Dorsey present. Supervisor Engardio. Engardio present. Supervisor Fielder. Fielder present. Supervisor Mahmoud. Mahmoud present. Supervisor Mandelman.
Present.
Mandelman present. Supervisor Melgar. Melgar present. Supervisor Sauter. Sauter present. Supervisor Cheryl. Cheryl present. And Supervisor Walton. Walton present. Mr. President, all members are present.
Thank you, Madam Clerk. The San Francisco Board of Supervisors acknowledges that we are on the unceded ancestral homeland of the Ramaytush Ohlone, who are the original inhabitants of the San Francisco Peninsula. As the indigenous stewards of this land and in accordance with their traditions, the Ramaytush Ohlone have never ceded, lost, nor forgotten their responsibilities as the caretakers of this place, as well as for all peoples who reside in their traditional territory. As guests, we recognize that we benefit from living and working on their traditional homeland. We wish to pay our respects by acknowledging the ancestors, elders, and relatives of the Ramaytush Ohlone community and by affirming their rights as First Peoples. Colleagues, will you join me in reciting the Pledge of Allegiance?
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
On behalf of the board, I want to acknowledge the staff at SFGovTV and today especially Sus Enos, who record each of our meetings and make the transcripts available to the public online. Madam Clerk, do you have any communications?
Yes, the San Francisco Board of Supervisors welcomes your attendance here in the board's legislative chamber within City Hall in room 250 on the second floor. If you'd like to, if you can't be present and you'd like to watch the board's proceedings, you can watch them on sfgovtv.org, or you can watch the live stream at www.sfgovtv.org or channel 26. Submit your comment in writing, send an email to bos@sfgov.org or through the Postal Service. Address the envelope to the San Francisco Board of Supervisors, the number 1, Dr. Carlton B. Goodlett Place, City Hall, room 244, San Francisco, California, 94102. If you need to make a reasonable accommodation under the Americans with Disability Act or request language assistance, contact the clerk's office 2 business days in advance by calling 415-554-5184. Thank you.
Thank you. Madam Clerk, let's go to unfinished business, item number 1.
Item 1, this is an ordinance to approve the surveillance technology policy for the Municipal Transportation Agency's continued use of existing automated red light and no-turn enforcement cameras.
Madam Clerk, can you please call the roll?
On item 1, Supervisor Walton.
Aye.
Walton, aye. Supervisor Chan.
Aye.
Chan, aye. Supervisor Chen. Chen, aye. Supervisor Dorsey.
Aye.
Dorsey, aye. Supervisor Engardio. Engardio, aye. Supervisor Fielder. Fielder, aye. Supervisor Mahmoud. Mahmoud, aye. Supervisor Mandelman.
Aye.
Mandelman, aye. Supervisor Melgar.
Aye.
Melgar, aye. Supervisor Sauter.
Aye.
Sauter, aye. And Supervisor Cheryl.
Aye.
Cheryl, aye. There are 11 ayes.
Without objection, the ordinance is finally passed. Madam Clerk, please call item number 2.
Item 2, ordinance to amend the Business and Tax Regulations Code to extend through June 30th, 2026, the waiver of certain first-year permit, license, and business registration fees for specified small businesses that newly form or that open a new location.
I think we can take this item same house, same call. Without objection, the ordinance is passed on first reading. Madam Clerk, let's go to committee reports.
Item 3 was considered by the Government Audit and Oversight Committee at a special meeting on Friday, June 27th, 2025, and was recommended as a committee report. Item 3 is a resolution that approves, for purposes of the Internal Revenue Codes of 1986 as amended, authorizing the execution and delivery of a multifamily housing revenue note in one or more series in an aggregate principal not to exceed $76 million to provide financing for the construction of an 89-unit multifamily rental housing project located at 65 Santos Street, known as the Sunnydale Hope SF Block 7. This item also approves the form of and authorizing the execution of multiple agreements, notes, and terms and conditions of the back-to-back loans.
Let's take this item, same house, same call. Without objection, the resolution is adopted. Madam Clerk, please call item 4.
Item 4 was considered by the Land Use and Transportation Committee at a regular meeting on Monday, June 30th, and was recommended as amended with the same title as a committee report. Item 4 is an ordinance that amends the planning and subdivision codes to allow separate conveyance of certain accessory dwelling units and associated primary residences as condominiums, and affirms the CEQA determination and makes the appropriate findings.
And I think we can take this item, same house, same call. Without objection, the ordinance is passed on first reading. Madam Clerk, let's go to roll call for introductions.
First member to introduce new business is Supervisor Walton.
Thank you, Madam Clerk. Colleagues, today I have a resolution and an in memoriam. The resolution is urging the city to establish a small business relief fund for merchants who will be affected by the Islayers Creek Bridge replacement project along the 3rd Street Bayview corridor. Construction will begin as early as January 2027 and will last for about 3 years and will result in the closure of 3rd Street between Moran Street and Cargo Way, cutting off direct access for residents, workers, and customers. This poses a serious risk to the neighborhood's small businesses, many of which are legacy, immigrant-owned, and black and brown-owned establishments that already face systemic barriers to recovery and growth. The bridge project is necessary for public safety and climate resilience, but the city must not ignore the economic harm that could result without proper safeguards in place. Small businesses along their 3rd Street corridor are already sounding the alarm that this project could devastate their customer base and make it impossible to stay afloat. The city has a responsibility to protect these merchants and ensure they are not left behind, just like how we created relief funds for merchants during other projects or during the pandemic. A creation of a small business relief fund dedicated to those impacted by this project should include grants, rent support, marketing help, and targeted outreach. If we can fund and build climate resilient infrastructure, we can also fund resilience for our local economies and working class neighborhoods. I also have an in memoriam. It is with a heavy heart that I join the Port of San Francisco and our entire city in the mourning of the sudden death of Byron Rhett. Byron was a dedicated public servant whose decades of leadership helped shape the San Francisco we know today. From his early years at the San Francisco Redevelopment Agency, where he led critical revitalization efforts in Bayview Hunters Point, to his transformative work at the Port of San Francisco, Byron brought vision, compassion, and purpose to everything he touched. As planning and development director, and later as chief operating officer, he was the quiet force behind some of the city's most iconic projects, from the revitalization of Pier 1 to the creation of Crane Cove Park and the innovation at Mission Rock and Pier 70. But Byron was more than a leader. He was a mentor, an advocate, and a builder of community. He believed deeply in equity, particularly in uplifting the Bayview, and he led with most integrity and heart. His work lives on not only in the places he's helped create, but in the values and spirit he instilled in those around him. San Francisco is better because of Byron Rhett. I am grateful for his lifelong commitment to our city, and I extend my deepest condolences to his wife, Andrea, and their sons, Justin and Zane. May his memory continue to guide us as we build a more inclusive and connected San Francisco. The rest I submit.
Thank you, Supervisor Walton. Supervisor Chan.
Thank you, Madam Clerk. Colleagues, first, I'm introducing a resolution in support of the National Association of Broadcast Employees and Technicians, Local 51, who represents KQED union workers and their efforts to demand KQED leadership to reinvest in local television programming, stop outsourcing production work, support valuable unionized jobs, and to ensure that our public media outlets reflect the needs of our local communities in the Bay Area. KQED had already eliminated all of their local news programming in 2023 and has continued to outsource production work to non-unionized facilities. KQED's retreat from local television production is not only a threat to KQED employees, but also sets a dangerous precedent for union labor and their shared values with the communities that they serve. Also, colleagues, today I'm introducing a resolution putting San Francisco on the record to oppose State Senate Bill 79, unless amended. Affordable housing developers and various tenants groups to attempt to secure amendments from the bill's chief sponsor, Senator Scott Wiener. And yet they have not been successful. So as their representative and local elected policymaker, we must stand up and intervene when bad state policy is being rushed through. We must have these discussions in public, not behind closed door. SB 79 will undo years of thoughtful community planning and put San Francisco's tenants and small businesses at risk of displacement without any protections, particularly as we anticipate additional amendments that would also incentivize the demolition of rent control units. SB 79's predecessor, SB 50, was rejected years ago, 5 years ago, by this board supervisors in this chamber because of its overreach and its potential threats to low-income and communities of color in vulnerable transit-accessible neighborhoods across cities in California. Now I am concerned that SB 79 is being fast-tracked while San Francisco is undertaking its own local citywide rezoning, upzoning, that seeks to be compliant with the California Department of Housing and Community Development's approved housing element that we all already adopted unanimously. SB 79 would completely override the work of that housing element to create protections for priority equity geographies, particularly in our neighborhood commercial corridors where small businesses are already struggling with rent and cost of doing business increase. We cannot blindly trust that tenants and small business will somehow magically be protected from displacement. Neighborhoods like the Richmond will be most at risk of being hollowed out as lots are merged, rents are increased, and buildings are emptied out to make them more attractive to real estate speculators. These places and in our neighborhoods have no protection from any of these speculative behaviors. There are also no guarantee that any housing, especially affordable housing, will even be built anytime soon. Somehow our own local administration will really have to recognize that ultimately this is not a housing bill. It is a deregulation and developer giveaway bill. It is not about actually building housing. It is about making the land attractive enough for speculators and investors to buy up, to increase the profits at the front end, and land is always more attractive without tenants. And in this case, for us, the people of San Francisco. Finally, the biggest problem with this bill, SB 79, is the lack of funding for affordability. Governor Gavin Newsom put out a budget with no funding for housing and homelessness, only punitive mandates. This is madness, and San Francisco cannot continue to shoulder the entire responsibility for funding housing infrastructure and free market and we can all know, have learned from years of history in San Francisco when we try to build affordable housing, that free market has never and will never build us enough affordable housing for San Franciscans. And the rest I submit. Thank you.
Thank you, Supervisor Chan. Supervisor Chen. Supervisor Chen? Oh. Submit. Thank you. Supervisor Dorsey.
Thank you, Madam Clerk. Colleagues, with appreciation to Supervisor Melgar and her staff for their work on this, particularly Mike Farah, I am today introducing a resolution that urges Blue Shield of California and the University of California Health System to resolve their dispute regarding reimbursement for medical services and treatment. This ongoing contract dispute was poised to disrupt healthcare access for many thousands of San Franciscans, including thousands of our city workers and retirees, in a matter of just a few days. Thankfully, we received word yesterday that the parties extended their negotiating deadline for 30 days to August 9th, and that they remain in negotiations. Still, a large segment of our city's workforce and retirees remain uncertain about the promise of access to UCSF Health's physicians and services that they relied upon when they chose Blue Shield during open enrollment. For Blue Shield to now potentially eliminate these healthcare options in the middle of a plan year is, in my view, unfair, and I want to express my appreciation to City Attorney David Chu and his office for exploring the city's legal options in this matter. I again want to thank Supervisor Melgar, who, like me, represents much of UCSF's footprint in San Francisco, for co-sponsoring this resolution. It is a relatively straightforward expression of our collective hope as a Board of Supervisors that we urge UCSF Health and Blue Shield to resolve their dispute by renewing their contract and thereby preserving their members' ability to access the crucial healthcare services they signed up for, or in the event that no long-term solution between Blue Shield and UCSF Health is possible, urging the parties to at least commit to preserve existing services for the remainder of the planned year and to provide certainty for future benefits for the 2026 plan year in time for open enrollment this fall. As your appointee to the San Francisco Health Services Board, I am working with HSS Director Ray Guillen and his team, as well as City Attorney Chu and his team, to monitor this situation. I know all of us have been hearing from our constituents as well as from our city workers and retirees on this matter. For the certainty of health benefits for all of them and their families, I hope I can have your support on this resolution as well. And the rest, I submit.
Thank you, Supervisor Dorsey. Supervisor Engardio. Submit. Thank you. Supervisor Fielder.
Thank you, Madam Clerk. Colleagues, I'm introducing a resolution today to designate July 12th as Toucan Day in honor of the fifth anniversary of the District 9 Block Party that celebrates the life and legacy of Sean Monterosa, as it has every year since 2020. Sean Monterosa had a bright, beautiful, and limitless life ahead of him. He was ambitious, loved by his community, was constantly looking for ways to uplift youth and those around him, and was deeply proud of his roots. As you know, his life was taken from him far too soon by a Vallejo police officer in 2020. But his memory and legacy live on in the community that continues to organize against police brutality, and his powerful sisters who continue to fight for justice, not only for their family, but others impacted by police brutality, and in the structures, art, and programs that have been created in his memory, including the Sean Monterosa Knowledge Up Community Library that provides bilingual books about social justice, a mural in his honor at 24th and South Van Ness, and the street name Sean Monterosa Boulevard next to Holly Park, where he grew up. Toucan Day is named after Sean's childhood nickname. It is a block party full of art, music, activities, and conversation about the issues Sean cared about. And above all else, it is a day for community healing. Sean was a young leader who worked on so many issues to make this a better world for young people. It is with that spirit that this resolution honors him and his family by designating this special day on its fifth anniversary as Toucan Day in San Francisco. I want to thank early co-sponsors Supervisors Chen, Melgar, and Walton, and I especially want to thank Michelle and Ashley Monterosa for their tireless work to honor their brother and build community around his bright light. The rest I submit.
Thank you, Supervisor Fielder. Supervisor Mahmoud.
Colleagues, today I am introducing the Shared Housing Reform Act, an ordinance that is meant to modernize the city's outdated definition of family in the planning code to expand access to shared housing and bring San Francisco into compliance with state housing regulations. San Francisco is a city of renters, and in our city's present housing affordability crisis, we must do all that we can to support households shared between unrelated roommates. These homes are a first step to independence and a first step to a life in San Francisco for so many. But under current law, many of these households may be at risk of enforcement action from the planning department for not fitting under an outdated definition of family. San Francisco's zoning laws try to tell people who counts as a family. If we want to be a more affordable city, we have to start by legalizing the way real San Franciscans live. Under current law, households of more than five unrelated individuals who do not cook meals together must meet group housing standards, often making older homes with housemates technically non-compliant. So today I'm introducing the Shared Housing Reform Act, which remedies this in several ways. One, it replaces the term family with household throughout the planning code. Two, it removes numeric limits on unrelated residents living together. Three, it establishes a nine-lease threshold to distinguish shared households from institutional group housing. Four, it recognizes shared financial responsibility, like rent and utilities, as the defining feature of a household. And lastly, it aligns local law with state mandates to treat community care and recovery facilities serving six or fewer individuals as dwelling units. The planning code was amended to limit the number of unrelated roommates that could live together around the time of the 1978 citywide downzoning process, often preventing builders and developers from building shared housing and co-op housing options to avoid enforcement by the city. The city's planning department has taken 14 enforcement actions since 2020. Reviewing the definition of family and its inclusion of non-related households was an explicit implementation recommendation of the housing element to ensure fair, inclusive, and equitable housing standards. This is about fairness, and this legislation recognizes that today's families and chosen families come in many forms. If it's good enough for our inclusive values, it should be good enough for our zoning code as well. Thanks to Josh Massamore, Mark Hogan, and Lisa Zahner for bringing this issue to my attention from the community. Thanks to Heather Goodman and Julia Gualco-Nelson from the City Attorney's Office, Raynell Cooper and Jessica Gutierrez-Garcia from my office, and Liz Waddy, Aaron Starr, Dan Sider, and Audrey Merloni from the Planning Department for their help on this legislation. Lastly, thank you to my colleagues, Supervisor Sauter, Cheryl, and Melgar for their early co-sponsorship. The rest I submit.
Thank you, Supervisor Mahmoud. Supervisor Mandelman.
Thank you, Madam Clerk. Colleagues, today I am introducing an ordinance to update the Administrative Code sections governing the Domestic Violence Shelter-Based Program Fund to ensure that our laws reflect the reality of how gender-based violence prevention work is being delivered in San Francisco. As part of last year's budget process, it was contemplated that the gender-based violence grant portfolio would move from the Department on the Status of Women to the Mayor's Office of Housing and Community Development. That transition is now well underway. MoCD conducted a full procurement process in late 2024 and early 2025. And new grant agreements with community-based organizations are set to begin today, July 1st. Notwithstanding that transition, our administrative code still assigns oversight of the Domestic Violence Shelter-Based Program Fund to the Department on the Status of Women. This ordinance corrects that outdated provision and formally moves administration of the fund to MoCD, the department now charged with overseeing this work. The legislation also addresses a number of other inconsistencies and outdated references in the code. I want to thank MoCD, the Department on the Status of Women, the County Clerk's Office, Jesse Minardi in the City Attorney's Office, and Melanie Mathewson in my office for their work on the legislation. I very much want to thank Beverly Upton and Emberly Cross for identifying some of the issues that needed to get addressed in the legislation, and for reviewing and providing feedback as it evolved, and of course for their advocacy in supporting victims of domestic violence. And I want to thank Supervisor Sherrill for his co-sponsorship, and the rest I submit.
Thank you, Mr. President. Supervisor Melgar.
Submit.
Thank you. Supervisor Sauter. Submit. Thank you. Supervisor Sherrill. Submit. Thank you. Mr. President, seeing no names on the roster, that concludes the introduction of new business.
All right. We have 3 minutes until 2:30, and so we could conceivably hear from one or perhaps two members of the public if anybody would like to provide their public comment now and get themselves out of here.
All right. We're setting the timer for 2 minutes. Please step up.
Okay.
How do you like my new They Live glasses? You know these ones? Yeah. I should put them like this, but it would be a bit stupid, right? Okay, anyway, yeah, Carpenter, like Jesus. Okay, so what's coming here, I said, you don't remember? Oh, there is something wrong here. Around the 5th of July, I said, late January, there's going to be an attack on us, everyone. We don't know yet. They call this a false flag, I think. It's just, we know it's coming. So watch your, excuse me for the word, asses. Make sure you are protected enough, because there are going to be some repercussions after coming up. So, mark my word, if it doesn't happen, it's because I managed to thwart it. You understand? The prediction is precise otherwise. Don't ask me how. I know that. Congratulations to the mayor to have accepted finally to start taking down the 5G towers, even though he doesn't want to confess about it yet because his handler might be a bit problematic for that. Okay, so you two here, you got to do the job, start doing what I said. Don't boast about it too much. What happened to the wildlife refugee on Treasure Island? What happened? Okay. What are you doing? You remember the wildlife refugee for mammals, North American mammals on Treasure Island? Going to create some jobs as well. And it's going to be beautiful. So, actually, congratulations for thinking about it already. I know you do. So, good. Now, proceed. Because it's going to happen anyway. Example, technology here. In the future, we're going to create no more street lights, no more traffic lights, based on everything with technology, telling you in advance who is coming. You see? That's how you use technology in a prolific and beneficial way for everyone.
Thank you for your comment. Welcome to the next speaker.
Peter Alexander, thank you. This 4th of July, we will now truly be celebrating freedom and liberty and justice. Well, except for Green Beret surgeon Dr. Jeffrey McDonald, who's still in prison 54 years later for blowing the whistle on Bush's heroin, for which they terminated the life of his pregnant wife and two daughters. And except for the tens of thousands of vets that are sitting in prison because they were self-medicating with the CIA's heroin. Or perhaps the 229 American anchorouts in Sausalito that had their vessels seized and crushed. And what of the treaties? There's still so many treaties. So, my soldiers are eternal. Yeah, Tupac Shakur said that. This July 4th, 2025, beautiful and alive. I am Peter. I am one with the Great Spirit, both seen and unseen. The power of love. I'm calling upon all warriors to play Santana's Turn Your Lights On and Bob Dylan's You Gotta Serve Somebody, for California is the most powerful state with the most powerful warriors now under my command. Rosebud, rosebud, now flower with the Christos lights overcoming power. Trump commanded power with a military parade. The illusory opposition, with its 5 million protesters and paid agitators, showed us their power. And the new Pope, with utterances and pageantry, showed us his power. I suggest regarding them all by playing Smiling Faces by The Undisputed Truth. I am Peter. I am commanding all hornblowers, sea captains, captains of trucking, of all car and biker clubs, and all dog soldiers and warriors of the Holy Spirit. Be ye releasing without ceasing the power Almighty, overcoming all this worldly corruptions, for all time is now, and now is the time. I say it, you hear it, it is so, it is done.
Thank you for your comments.
All right. We will now take a break from public comment and go to our 2:30 special order, Madam Clerk.
It's now time for the recognition of commendations for meritorious service to the City and County of San Francisco.
We're going to start with six, but we're not starting. We are going to not. Okay. We'll come back to six. All right. Is D10 ready? Supervisor Walton, are you ready or come back? You're ready. All right, let's do District 10, Supervisor Walton.
Thank you so much, President Mandelman. Colleagues, today it is my distinct honor to present this special commendation to Ms. Diane Gray in celebration of her extraordinary career and her well-earned retirement. Ms. Gray, could you come up, please? Diane Gray is the embodiment of what it means to serve community with purpose, pride, and power. A proud San Francisco native and 48-year resident of Bayview Hunters Point, Diane has dedicated her life to uplifting our youth, empowering families, and strengthening the future of our city. Through decades of tireless work in education, government, and community organizing, Diane has remained rooted in the belief that when one of us succeeds, we all succeed. A principle she has instilled in generations through her signature mantra, "My success is your success." As co-founder of 100% College Prep, Diane transformed the educational landscape for hundreds of students from Bayview Hunters Point and across San Francisco. Her vision and leadership have not only paved the way for countless first-generation college students, but has also helped ensure that our young people are supported from high school and through college completion. Through initiatives like Jumpstart to College and Get Through College, Diane created a model for long-term success, especially for students too often overlooked. Diane has also made an indelible impact as education director at Young Community Developers and in her roles across multiple city departments, including the San Francisco Police Commission, the San Francisco Public Utilities Commission, San Francisco Treasurer's Office, and San Francisco Unified School District. She has served over 20 years as a city and county employee, always bringing integrity, compassion, and excellence to her work. Her legacy is not only in her professional accomplishments, but in her civic leadership. Diane has been a vital force in efforts like the Black to the Future Initiative, My Brother and Sister's Keeper, Mega Black San Francisco, and numerous advisory bodies and commissions, all dedicated to ensuring that equity and justice are more than just ideals, but lived realities in San Francisco. For her decades of service, Diane has rightfully earned countless accolades, including the San Francisco's Warriors Impact Award, Jefferson Silver Award, and honors from national and local Black organizations. But no award can fully capture the profound impact Diane has had on the city and the people in it. Diane, your retirement marks the close of a powerful chapter, but your legacy will continue to shape the future of San Francisco for generations to come. On behalf of the residents of District 10 and a grateful city, I want to thank you for your unwavering service, your love for community, and your belief in our youth. With deepest respect and admiration, we thank you and congratulate you on your retirement. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Honorable Supervisor of the illustrious District 10. Thank you so much for honoring me today, and to the rest of the board commissioners and board president. It has been truly a blessing to support and help our young people fly when they didn't know they had wings. And in 1999, my cousin and I were just volunteering in our community and had a conversation with a group of young teens, young women that we were helping and volunteering with, and had a conversation about college and career, and didn't like what we heard. And so we just got together, and a one-day-a-week girls group turned into a second day of a college club. And we had no intentions of this 25 years later in nonprofit world. We were just supporting young people in our community and making sure that they had what they need to come back and be great citizens in our city. And so today, after 25 years, it's time to pass the torch. We have gotten hundreds of young people in college and through college, to persist through college. Today we have hundreds of students who have college degrees, they have master degrees, and we have two that have their PhD or EdDs. And a grand number of those students come from the Bayview-Hunters Point community, but we also serve young people all over our city. And we've been able to partner with many of the organizations here in the city and beyond. I have my team here of coaches, could not do this alone. I would love for them to stand up and just be seen. The work that we've done has been in community. And really quickly, the work that we have done, as Supervisor Walton just mentioned, has been in community, and it's also been in our schools. And when I left City Hall as a special assistant to the treasurer, I went over to the San Francisco Unified School District because of the work that I was doing in the community. Took a pretty good pay cut, but I had prayed about it. And I knew what my mission was, and God had given me that mission and that purpose. And then I left the Unified School District to focus on the work that we were doing in the community. So again, it's been a blessing to work with our young people, to see them come back and make a difference in our city. A number of them have worked at right here with our city and City Hall and city agencies. And so that is the work of 100%, and that's the work that will continue on in the next chapter, the next journey, the next phase of 100% will be in that leadership. So I've focused on cultivating the next group of leaders so that they will continue this work that we need so desperately to do and that we need. And we will continue to work with our school district as well, side by side, with them to make sure that our young people have what they need. So again, thank you so much. Again, it's been a true blessing. Today is my first day Billy Wang said, rewirement, because I will stay, I will stay in the community, and I will continue to do this work as a forever founder. So thank you again so much. Appreciate your time and your recognition today. Thank you. Oh, wow.
We're still waiting, Supervisor Dorsey, right? Okay. Let's go to District 3, Supervisor Sauter.
Right. Thank you, President Mandelman. You know, the calendar may say that Pride is over, but since we're San Francisco, we're going to keep things going a little longer and today recognize Scott Taylor, the owner of the Cinch Saloon. Scott, would you come join us at the podium? The Cinch opened in 1974 on Polk Street, meaning it is one of the city's oldest gay bars. And that is exactly why in the past few years, there's been so much concern and anxiety as rumors swirled about the future of the Cinch. But to our great relief, Scott stepped in last month as the new owner. And from talking to him and hearing from his patrons, I know he's doing this because he feels a responsibility and a calling to carry the Cinch forward. Scott brings more than two decades of hospitality experience, and he has a longtime love and history at the Cinch. He first visited more than 20 years ago, and he even had his first date with his partner at the Cinch. Today, the Cinch might be among the last gay bars on Polk Street, but it reminds us of the role that Polk Street has played in our LGBTQ plus history. Some of the most prominent gay bars of the 1950s and 60s were on Polk Street, Corner Pocket, The Jumping Frog, and Busby's. The first gay business association in the entire country, Tavern Guild of San Francisco, was comprised mostly of Polk Street merchants. And the first San Francisco Pride Parade happened not on Market Street or in the Castro, but along Polk Street in 1972. I think Scott said it best when he said, "In a city where so many LGBTQ plus landmarks have disappeared, protecting these spaces is more important than ever." The Cinch isn't just a bar, it's a living piece of queer history, and now it is secured for the next generation to celebrate, gather, and thrive. Scott, I want to appreciate all the work that you're doing, that you have done, and that you will do going forward. It is not easy to take a leap into what you're doing, into owning a small business in San Francisco, into owning a bar, and especially one with such high expectations, such a treasured place in so many people's hearts. So thank you for doing that. Thank you for making sure that the Cinch will live on for another generation. And with that, I'd love to hear if you want to share any words.
Well, thank you very much for the recognition. I very much appreciate this coming out of the Board of Supervisors and especially Supervisor Sauter's office. We do what we can to preserve these spaces for the community because they are shrinking, and it's our responsibility as a community to kind of uplift these positions and to be able to kind of keep these safe spaces open for people moving forward. So thank you again. I appreciate the recognition and look forward to working together moving forward.
I would note that we have been joined by former Congressman, President of the California State Senate, and Democratic Party Chair of the State of California, John Burton, as well as as well as our former colleague and former president of this board, Aaron Peskin. As well as former assemblyman, former president of this board, and current city attorney David Chu. So something is up. D6 supervisor, Matt Dorsey.
Thank you, President Mandelman. Colleagues, on the occasion of her retirement, I have the great honor today of recognizing a remarkable public servant who happens also to be a friend and former city attorney's office colleague of mine, whose career has been distinguished by extraordinary leadership and by a fierce commitment to justice and equity, Kamiko Burton. Kamiko, could you take the lectern? Kamiko is a proud San Franciscan, a graduate of Lowell High School, UC Davis, and UC Hastings, now UC Law San Francisco, and someone who has spent more than three decades fighting effectively and well for our city's most disadvantaged. To those of us who know Kimmy, of course, that's no surprise. She comes from a family whose commitment to public service is legendary, including her father, John Burton, who's here today, as you mentioned, an extraordinary assembly member, senator, Senate president, congressman, chair of the California Democratic Party, and not least an extraordinary father, who instilled in his no less extraordinary daughter a passion for justice and a tireless drive to fight for those who are vulnerable and most in need of fighters. Kamiko Burton joined the city attorney's office 22 years ago, not long after I joined that office, in fact, as team leader of the child and family team, now the dependency and mental health team. She has led that team's vitally important work ever since, overseeing two confidential court-based practices with very heavy and active court caseloads. It is work that is never in the limelight, and its heroes are always unsung. Kimmy's team handled caseloads that routinely involved some of the most complex cases and many of the most difficult issues known in human endeavor, representing the interests of abused and neglected children, working with protective services workers, and handling mental health conservatorships in care court. Kimmy and her team advised the Families and Children's Services Division of the Human Services Agency in all phases of dependency litigation. It's a team that serves as advice counsel as well as litigation counsel on more than 600 conservatorship cases in San Francisco. Kimmy has guided that work tirelessly with compassion, humanity, and professionalism and a steady hand, appearing in court nearly every day during the pandemic, leading her team through major system changes, and preparing for and implementing the most significant update to California's conservatorship laws in more than 50 years. Beyond her legal acumen, however, Kamiko has also been a powerful force for equity within the city attorney's office. For the past 2 years, she served as the racial equity task force, first as a member, then as co-chair, helping lead new initiatives like that office's Law Fellow Program and its internship partnership with Howard University School of Law. She has also been an active member of the Asian Pacific American Alliance since its founding in 2021, helping to strengthen the community and visibility for AAPI staff. Kimmy's colleagues describe her as a fierce advocate, a thoughtful mentor, a supportive leader, and someone who brings humor and heart to every space she's in. Further enhancing my affection for her, she's also a diehard fan of the 49ers and two of my highest profile constituents, our Golden State Warriors and your San Francisco Giants.
And our Golden State Valkyries.
That's right, and the Valkyries. Kamiko Burton, on behalf of the San Francisco Board of Supervisors, it is my honor to commend you for your years of service to our city, for bringing hope where there is hopelessness, for giving voice to the voiceless, for doing justice, and for making ours a city that is truly the city of St. Francis. We thank you and we congratulate you on your well-earned retirement.
If I might just add an expression of gratitude to Kamiko Burton, I have had the great good fortune of being able to work with you over my last 7 years on this board. where I have been interested in the areas where you have been practicing in the city attorney's office. And you have had the misfortune of practicing in an area where so many politicians have had so many demands over that time. And you have carried on gracefully and consistently with the law and tried to explain to politicians and others who may not always understand what the law requires, what it does require, and also explain some of the challenges about actually making progress in some of these really hard areas. So you are, as Supervisor Dorsey said, funny and charming and a great lawyer, and it's been an honor to be able to work with you. And it looks like your boss might want to say something.
Boss.
former boss.
Friday.
David Chu.
Okay.
Good afternoon, Mr. President, supervisors. We appreciate you taking a moment to acknowledge an incredible honoree. Our San Francisco City Attorney's Office has been blessed to have legions of amazing legal professionals who've graced our office and our city government. But as I've said at now several retirement celebrations, when Kimmy Burton started with the city, she broke the mold. As she leaves the city, she has shattered the mold with a few F-bombs in between. Some 34 years ago, as Supervisor Dorsey has laid out, she started serving our city. And like Burtons before her, including the incredible 92-year-old Burton, who is gracing our presence today, she has given voice to the voiceless. She has fought for the most vulnerable among us, whether it be countless individuals facing criminal charges when she was a deputy public defender, or her work on behalf of hundreds of children in child abuse and neglect cases, or countless unhoused individuals or individuals with mental health challenges. She has served in our office as the head of our child and family team and the head of our mental health and dependency team, leading her team and our office through many, many changes in the law over the decades. Reforms in our criminal justice system, implementing our new care court system, preparing for incredible updates to our conservatorship law. And over the years, she has served not just thousands of San Franciscans, but she has guided dozens and dozens of incredible legal professionals through their work. And I speak on their behalf. She's been an incredible mentor and a model for legions of public servants. And if that is not enough, she is someone who has been a champion for equity and opportunity within our office and our city as our outgoing chair of our racial equity task force. There is no one who has been a more fierce or strategic advocate for the causes that she has led. There's no one who has a bigger heart, and there's no one who is sassier. And so on behalf of the best municipal law office in the country, as we lose one of the very best of our ranks, we want to wish her the very best as she starts a new phase in her life. Our best to you. We love you, Kimmy Burton.
You're up.
He said I can't swear. I feel like I've been called to the principal's office. Matt, Supervisor Dorsey, sorry. Thank you so much, and to all of the members of this august board. And Angela, I remember when we were Baby City employees together, and girl, look at you now. Thank you, Raphael, and everyone. Shout out to my supervisor, Shimon. The biggest shout out to my family. My mom couldn't be here, and my son is working, but my daughter and my dad are here, and without my family, none of this would be possible. They have worn the sacrifices. They have borne sacrifice as I have done my work over the last 34 years, so for that, I am grateful. I also need to give my mom a shout out. Everybody talks about the Burton legacy, which is amazing, but I come from it on both sides. My grandfather on my mom's side was a labor organizer when it was very unpopular to be a labor organizer, and one got thrown into prison for such things, which my grandfather did. So I come from it on both sides. I am a Burton, I am a Hall, and I am an Ogawa. And I am proud of all of that. David, thank you so much for keeping me when you when you came on. We haven't had as many years, but it has been a wonderful ride with you. So thank you for your leadership and the way that you run this office. Shout out to Yvonne Murray. I don't even know what your title is, but whatever it is, the best one, in my view, that the office has ever had. Our team does work that, as Matt said in Raffaello's, don't hit the headlines unless something really, really bad has happened. So we do like to stay out of the paper. But Yvonne has thrown herself into becoming familiar with the work that we do and is such a tremendous support to my team, former team. And I know how much she will support Diana Carbajal-Strait, who is here in the audience, who has taken over the leadership of this remarkable team. And I just, so much of my team is here today, and I thank you guys so much for being here. I know you guys don't even all come in on Tuesdays, so thank you for coming in for that. And to, I see a number of my colleagues, my former colleague, Julie, thank you. But thank you, everybody, for being here. Chris, shout out, co-chair of APAA. Thank you for the work that you continue to do for the city and for the work that our team does that is largely unknown and under the radar as it should be, but you guys do remarkable work. Never forget that. Never forget that you are kick butt attorneys, that you guys can carry anybody's water in court, and that I would come to you guys with any legal problem and want you guys to be the one carrying my bag. There's other words that come to mind. I'm trying to behave. Anyway, thank you so much. I really appreciate this honor. I'm going to stop talking. Thank you so much.
Okay, next up, District 9, Supervisor Fielder.
Thanks, President Mandelman. Colleagues, today I have the distinct pleasure of honoring my dear friends and D9 small business owners, Charlie and Chrissy Harb, owners of Charlie's Cafe. Please come to the podium. Charlie's Cafe has been a beloved fixture in Bernal Heights that has been in operation for over 24 years. It's been a central gathering spot on the Presidio Park side of Bernal Heights since 2001. Before the cafe came into being in 1989, Chrissy drove across the country from her hometown of Detroit to live in San Francisco with her brother and attend City College. A native of Palestine, Charlie attended Bethlehem University as an undergrad and went on to graduate school for architecture in Jerusalem. When the uprising of 1987 broke out, the resulting political turmoil and dangerous road closures and blockades forced Charlie to leave his studies in Jerusalem and earn his degree in architecture from UC Berkeley. Charlie met his wife and life partner, Chrissy, in 1991. Their two wonderful kids, Dahlia and Jerry's, grew up in the cafe. In 2001, Charlie bought a little corner business with his sister, Raida, who was planning to run a cafe with her husband. Shortly after purchase, Raida, then pregnant with her third child, decided to move her family to Canada and left the business in the hands of Chrissy and Charlie, who established what has become a regular stop for hundreds of neighbors from throughout Bernal and the Mission. These neighbors all call Charlie and Chrissy their good friends because once you enter their door, you are brought immediately into their orbit of friendship. And today you can see that in action with the group from the neighborhood that has come to cheer them on. Over the years, they have amassed a broad, dedicated community who adore them, some of whom are here. And over the years, Charlie has employed a wide diversity of people who come from all over the world. The current staff, Areli, Christina, Jose, and Alexi, contribute so much to making the cafe warm and welcoming. On any given day, they can be found working behind the counter, juggling multiple orders, preparing the food, and always treating each customer with a big smile. What sets this place apart from others is the sense of familiarity and joy and community when you walk in the door. Charlie and Chrissy have dedicated themselves to creating a space that is an expression of love for the community, and they continue to do this despite the difficulties of keeping a small business afloat in San Francisco. Through the years, they have hosted events that elevate important social issues and promote art, poetry, and music. They host cultural celebrations and fundraisers for Palestine, Ukraine, and all manner of local and global issues. During the pandemic, they opened a parklet and held outdoor live bluegrass jams on Friday mornings and weekends that continue to this day, including a Thursday night pop-up, as well as a pop-up on Friday mornings. Whether it's helping build connections among neighbors or just offering a relaxing place to hang out and have a bite, Charlie's Cafe is always there. I just want to thank you all for being such a pillar in the community and for all you do for District 9.
Thank you, Supervisor Fielder. Thank you, President and board members. I just wanted to announce that we're retiring too, since it looks like everybody before us retired. Maybe we keep up the same theme. We're very humbled, especially with the previous people who were ahead of us. We feel like we're just living our lifestyle and we're doing our normal life. I don't think running a small business in San Francisco is a business. I feel like it's just it's a way of life. You spend 10 hours a day, 7 days a week among these people. We're very honored to what we do. Chrissy and I, 24 years, worked day and night. In the beginning, it's very hard, but we made it happen. I mean, like I said, we have a huge family. I mean, we have thousands of people we consider very close friends. And few people are here, but everyone makes a difference to us and make us get up at 6 o'clock in the morning and go open up and wait for a smile, somebody to come and check on us. Especially the last few years, for what's happening in the old country, everybody comes in. We're talking about hundreds of people a day come and check on my mom and my brother and my family. So we feel we're part of the city. I've been here 35 years, and as an immigrant, I don't feel as an immigrant at all compared to everybody around us. San Francisco is very special. It's really, I never left it. People say, how come you never tried somewhere else? I'm like, because this is home now. Thank you. My extended family, my mom's family came here in the 70s, and my great uncles came here in the 60s, and they never left either. I mean, it's a place to be comfortable as a foreigner, to make it home. We really appreciate this honor, and we're humbled to have it. Thank you so much.
Is it still on? I just want to thank all of you guys for being here and supporting us for so many years.
All right, and finally, from District 8, I am going to invite Debbie Lerman to come on up. Colleagues, today it is my honor to present a special commendation to Debbie Lerman, who earlier this year retired after more than two decades as the director of the San Francisco Human Services Network and a 40-year career of advocacy, community organizing, and public service. Since 2001, Debbie led the Human Services Network, a coalition of nearly 80 nonprofit health and human service providers that serve thousands of San Franciscans every day. Under her direction, the network has become one of the most trusted voices for the city's safety net, advocating for fair funding, effective policy, and a more equitable partnership between government and the nonprofit sector. She's guided the coalition through multiple budget crises, defended critical services from cuts, and helped shape the values that now anchor San Francisco's human services funding framework. In every meeting, every hearing, every hallway conversation at City Hall, Debbie has shown up, relentless, prepared, and always grounded in the needs of those most impacted. Before joining the network, Debbie served in a range of leadership roles that reflect her commitment to economic justice and opportunity, from placing low-income workers into good union construction jobs, to managing coalitions focused on environmental and health equity, to raising funds and building capacity for countless local nonprofits. A proud alum of MIT and UC Berkeley School of Law, go Bears, Debbie brought rigor, strategy, and a sense of purpose to every role she held. She's also been a tireless volunteer and organizer, raising money for frontline organizations, counseling students in crisis, and working the floor at San Francisco's iconic music venues for decades as a volunteer usher and supervisor. Throughout her career, Debbie has combined sharp policy analysis with grassroots sensibility, never losing sight of the people behind the programs. She's been a steady champion for nonprofit workers, for better contracting practices, and for a city that invests in the people and organizations that hold our social fabric together. Her impact has been felt in nearly every human services budget the city has passed over the last 20 years. On behalf of a grateful city, thank you, Debbie, for your passion, your persistence, your incredible mind, and your lifelong commitment to making San Francisco a more just and compassionate place. Congratulations on your very well-earned retirement. And now the floor is yours.
Thank you, President Mandelman, for this honor. It is very meaningful to me. I was very nervous the first time I came up to this podium almost 25 years ago, and I'm a little nervous now.
Well, Debbie, we want to hear you better, so grab that microphone closer to you, please.
Got it, Angela. Thank you. One of the first things I did for the Human Services Network was organize a conference on the three-legged stool, the partnership between nonprofits, government, and the philanthropic sector. And today it feels like that partnership's a little shaky. We have some huge budget cuts, political attacks coming from well-moneyed interests, and a federal government that is making the act of helping people almost subversive. And it is shocking what we're going through today. I would be remiss if I didn't mention the cost of doing business today. I've used that phrase so many times that I've thought about training a parrot to just sit on my shoulder and say it over and over again until it sinks in. Our nonprofits are a treasure. You don't know what it's got till it's gone. And the city must renew its commitment to sustaining our nonprofits to prevent unintended consequences and harm to the people that we serve. And most important, I thank every frontline worker who has the hardest job in the city, getting up in the morning and going out there to help people. They deserve better wages. I can speak personally what it's like to have a 45-year career in the nonprofit sector. I've been able to get away with it because I have a rent control department. I have cats instead of kids. And yeah, I have a second job. I do security at the Fillmore so I can go see live music that I can't afford on a nonprofit salary. And it's not right to ask that of others who want to have a similar career path. So we need to remain laser focused on that goal. San Francisco has always been a leader and has always and will continue to make national change by our example. And so everything you do in this room is important. It has been my privilege to be a part of that as an advocate for our sector and to help empower others to fill that role as well. And I have the deepest gratitude to all of our nonprofits, their leaders, and their workers, to the Human Services Network's founders, Bruce Fisher and Ann Lazarus, who hired me 24 years ago, and to our co-chairs, Steve Fields and Sherilyn Adams, who give so much of their time to HSN while struggling to run their own huge organizations, and to our new leader, Rocio Molina, who, if you haven't met her yet, you're going to, and have every confidence in her ability to take on this next phase of HSN's work. I thank my partner, Joel Gendler, for supporting me. I couldn't do this work without him. And I thank every public official, department head, supervisor, mayor's office, staff person, legislative staff, Angela, all of you who have stood up for our sector and who have supported better funding, better services, and better pay for our workers. And over the years, even the ones who even when we've disagreed, I have to say that most have engaged in conversations with respect and substance and thoughtfulness, and I very much appreciate that. So again, thank you, President Mandelman. Thank you to the whole board. Shout out to District 1, my home for 35 years, and our great supervisor, Connie Chan. I'm sure this will not be the last you hear from me. So thank you.
Right, so I think that takes us back to public comment.
Yes, for those of you who still would like to provide public comment, please line up on your right-hand side of the chamber. We'll set the timer for 2 minutes. Let's hear from our first speaker. Is that you, Mr. Amon? Okay. Welcome.
Yeah, thank you, Angela. The last time I talked to you, both in this bill, I think it was in the clerk's office, you were seeing Tom Amiano. Is that correct? You were having dinner with him or something. Is that correct?
Yes, but Mr. Amon, this is your time to talk to the board about your thoughts.
Yes, I don't know some of you. You know Matt Dorsey, Connie Chan. I don't know how to say your name, sir.
To the board as a whole.
This gentleman, African-American gentleman, yes. Connie Chan. My new supervisor, I don't know his name. He said it to me. I have to hear it several times. Ms. Melgar. And, of course, Raphael Mendelman. And I need to come here more often for your committee membership. I want to apologize to Supervisor Raphael Mendelman. First I went to the Board of Elections. I think it was Wednesday. I came to Supervisor Raphael Mendelman's office, and when I arrived, there was a woman and a man. I didn't find right away, they were interns. A woman came out of this room, because I think the door might have been locked or closed, and she introduced herself to me, and I got an argument with her, and her name was Melanie something. What's your last name, please? Melanie. This is an aide to Raphael Mendelman. Melanie is a legislative aide, and I got an argument with her. And she said she gave $100 to... No, I'm not through. I need to say this, please. So she gave $100, and I said, I just met you, and I don't believe you. So we got into an argument, and she called the sheriffs, and a whole bunch showed up. I was surprised because she didn't like my attitude, and I gave her attitude, and I'm wrong. So I want to thank you for all the women in this chamber. I don't know all of you, but I know some of you, and I will, in the near future, come to the committee membership. But I'd like to apologize to Raphael Mendelman and State Senator Scott Wiener. And I have one other
thing
to say.
Thank you, Mr. Mendelman.
I want to say one more thing.
Thank you, Supervisor.
I give to the...
Jeffrey, St. Jude's. Jeffrey, your time is concluded. Thank you for your comments. Thank you. Can we hear from our next speaker, please?
Sorry, thank you.
Okay.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Thank you for all your time, every one of you, in this whole room.
All right, welcome to our next speaker.
Okay. Hello, my name is Leah McGeever, and I live in D6. During the trans march, the mayor was heckled away because he was not welcome there, and it wasn't his fucking event. On June 28th, the cisgender gay D6 supervisor had this to say to his transphobic conservative base: "This obnoxious behavior doesn't represent San Francisco's LGBTQ+ community, and our ally, Mayor Daniel Lurie, deserves better. Everyone in the LGBT community needs to start calling out this embarrassing fringe that's badly hurting the cause of LGBTQ+ progress for all of us." To me, this literally sounds like he's calling for people to bully us for what? Decorum? None of you represent the transgender community. You should be supporting us, but you're not. So shut the fuck up about how you think we should be protesting our oppression, our dehumanization, our demonization, and erasure from society. Got that? None of you gave a single fuck about the trans flag being taken away from the pride flag-raising ceremony. Black and brown trans women fought for your gay rights. And are you giving any of your rights up voluntarily because of decorum? Decency. Y'all have abandoned trans children and youth, which is unconscionable. There's not one press release or statement about life-saving health care being taken away from children in this country. Trans children. How can you fucking abandon them knowing, because you think you know them better than yourselves? I mean, know yourself. Just fuck off unless you're gonna fucking support us. Aye, indeed. There was a drag artist, a queer Latinx one, that was abducted last week by ICE. One supervisor actually showed up for an event to support that person. Another one said they're keeping tabs on it, and everyone else is silent. Is SF a transgender and immigrant sanctuary city or not? And you'll be funny if this Mexican stole your job.
Leah McGeever, I've heard you make similar comments, but being more articulate. You have a good speaking ability. Thank you for your comments. Can we hear from our next speaker, please?
Good afternoon. I was born and raised in San Francisco. I'm a renter, and I've lived in my current home on the edge of Noe Valley in the Mission for over 20 years. I love this city. I've always believed in its values. But right now, I feel completely unprotected. We hear a lot about tenant protections in San Francisco, and rightly so. But what happens when someone who was never on the lease, never screened, and never approved gains access to a unit and begins terrorizing roommates, threatening other tenants, harassing neighbors, damaging property, and violating court orders? What happens when their behavior drives out lawful tenants, destabilizes entire buildings, and leaves neighbors to police their own safety? What about the small business owners who have poured their life savings into these properties? This isn't a one-time incident. In my case, this individual has done the same thing at least 5 other properties across San Francisco, and I'm sure there are others like him, bad actors who exploit gaps in our city laws. Now it's happening again, this time in the flat directly below me. I've gone to court. I've obtained both a civil harassment restraining order and a criminal protective order. I've filed reports. I've called 911. But the police are stretched so thin, they often don't respond at all, or they show up hours later when the danger has passed. Even clear violations of court orders are treated as optional. There is no coordinated city response, no accountability, no safety net for longtime residents like me who are being terrorized in our own homes. I've had to move my dogs to safety. I'm currently taking time off work to pack up my life, not because I want to leave, but because I no longer feel safe staying. This is a systemic failure. There are no city resources for master tenants or longtime residents to turn to when things go off the rails. And yet we're the ones left holding the bag, paying lawyers, losing wages, calling 911, managing trauma, and fearing for our safety in our own homes. This is not just a personal crisis or a housing dispute. It's a failure of city policy.
Your time has elapsed. Thank you. Thank you for sharing. Next speaker, please. You have you can leave it on the dais there, and we'll pick it up. Thank you so much. Next speaker, please. You have 2 minutes.
Good afternoon, supervisors. My name is Ann Draper, and I'm Stephanie's mother. I own the building she lives in and pays rent for. I have an unlawful detainer proceeding going against this individual. It's a 9-month process. I will see it through to the end. He's attempting to extort me to pay him money to leave, but what he's really extorting me for is the harassment of 5 women who lived in my building. 3 of them are gone. None of these women deserve to be harassed, and there's something you can do about it. You can take a look at who is slipping through the cracks. A lot of these policies and rent ordinances are a good thing, but there are always people that can evade them and get around them. 3 roommates of this individual left the building, each in a panic. An accounting analyst, a preschool teacher, and a woman that takes care of dogs. These are women that should have been safe living in a unit. He removes all the smoke protectors. He won't let me in. Anybody in the building could be injured by that. And every way I look, it's a roadblock. I'm an attorney. I'm 76. I'm in my 50th year of practice. I should be able to figure this out. Half of my practice is in Department 501, the Housing Court and Real Property Department. But I can't get anything done that protects my tenants. And I have a moral and a legal obligation, and I wish you would do something. Fund the police department for the missing 400 officers. Take a look at who's getting by these. This man has 21 civil actions and 5 more under another name and 18 civil restraining orders. How does that get slipping through the system? I hope you'll take a look at it. It won't solve my problem, but it'll solve somebody else's. Thank you.
Next speaker, please.
Good afternoon, supervisors. My name is Mark Solomon. I've lived in what was to become the Native Cultural District for 35 years in the North Mission. I co-founded the Community Land Trust, served on the MTA Citizen Advisory Committee, wrote the resolution that led to the Harvey Milk Memorial being in place here, and was a member of the Plaza 16 Coalition 10 years ago as a volunteer. Our neighborhood has a history. Mission Neighborhood Center 20 years ago was welcomed in as a homeless center. It has turned the 100 block of Cap Street into crap. Gubbio went ahead and sided itself at 15th and Julian. It has turned that intersection into crap. With that record, we opposed Mission Cabins. Once Mission Cabins was sited at 1979 Mission, the fentanyl influx happened and gunfire rang out. We were correct on that. None of this happened before these facilities were opened. So when we add new facilities, we bring things to neighborhoods. The city's solution to this is for Meta and Mission Housing to decide to site permanent supportive housing, PSH, for homeless people adjacent to the Marshall Elementary School. We're talking about nonprofit salaries. At Meta, Luis Granados made $366,000 in 2023. Sam Moss made $275,000 at Mission Housing. Moss is a YIMBY. These YIMBYs attacked Marshall parents, they attack nonprofits, and they attack residents as NIMBYs even after we fought for affordable housing at 1979 Mission, because we don't want addicts and psych cases to be sited next to a vulnerable elementary school that has a high preponderance of homeless kids, of immigrant kids, of kids of color, and of low-income kids. What's next, an ICE substation in the neighborhood to help out our partners? We've asked Supervisor Fielder for help. She's not contacted us. Jackie Fielder, will you commit right here and right now to facilitate mediation between Marshall parents, residents, and nonprofits so we can meet with Mission Housing and Meta to find an amicable solution for the affordable housing for homeless families that our neighborhood really needs? Will you? Through the chair.
Sir, if you could address the whole board.
That's
Thank
a no.
Thank you so much. Next speaker, please. You have 2 minutes.
My name is Richard S.T. Peterson. Welcome, Board of Supervisors and President Mandelman. And I have to echo a lot of the policies against roommates that are going on. It cost me, as a lawyer when I was actually practicing law, over $10,000 to remove a roommate that was only, and was a friend, that I was only charging $400 a month to live in a Noe Valley bedroom apartment. Well, it's not an apartment, my cottage. So I sympathize. But the message for today, I think, is compromise. We've got to figure out something to compromise. There is resistance going on, understandable, and you have to have strong resistance to be able to make a rational compromise. And that is the word that I would like to leave you with today. It's not defiance. If you defy, certain very bad things are going to happen. I'm an atheist, and I'm classified with the communists, the socialists, and the terrorists in the Group of Four. And so I can see that if you can't reach some kind of compromise, which I understand and I do think that the mayor is trying to do, we're going to be lost. Anyway, I keep wearing one purple for a shout out for the Valkyries and a shout out to Mimi Haas. Love you. Bye.
Thank you for your comments. Let's hear from our next speaker. And Mr. Rahman, you know there's no audible sounds of approval such as that. Before you speak, sir, are there any other members of the public who would like to address the board during general public comment? Please step up, otherwise this will be our last speaker. Okay.
Buenas tardes. Mi nombre es Capricho Flores. Yo soy de Distrito 5. Y gracias para estos dos minutos para de hablar con ustedes. Y mi petición es para que traiga otra vez la Playland a la Oceana, a la playa de la Oceana, Ocean Beach, Playland, para ponerlo otra vez como antes, y también el Sutro Bathhouse, si puedes. Gracias. Adiós. Dios te bendiga.
Thank you for your comments. All right, Mr. President.
Public comment is now closed. Madam Clerk, could we go to the for adoption of that committee reference agenda? Please call item 7.
Item 7 was introduced for adoption without committee reference. Item 7 is a motion that the board convene in closed session on July 8th, 2025, for the purpose of conferring with or receiving advice from the city attorney regarding the following existing litigation in which the city is a petitioner and Pacific Gas and Electric Company is an adverse party.
Seeing no one on the roster, Madam Clerk, can you please call the roll?
On item 7, Supervisor Walton. Walton, aye. Supervisor Chan. Chan, aye. Supervisor Chen. Chen, aye. Supervisor Dorsey. Dorsey, aye. Supervisor Engardio. Engardio, aye. Supervisor Fielder. Fielder, aye. Supervisor Mahmoud. Mahmoud, aye. Supervisor Mandelman.
Aye.
Mandelman, aye. Supervisor Melgar.
Aye.
Melgar, aye. Supervisor Sauter. Sauter, aye. And Supervisor Cheryl. Cheryl, aye. There are 11 ayes.
Without objection, the motion is approved. Madam Clerk, do we have any imperative agenda items?
I have none to report, Mr. President.
Could you please read the in memoriams?
Yes. Today's meeting will be adjourned in memory of the following beloved individual. On behalf of Supervisor Walton, for the late Mr. Byron Rhett.
Colleagues, I think that brings us to the end of our agenda. Madam Clerk, do we have any further business before us today?
That concludes our business for today.
Then we are adjourned.
Thank you, Angela.